It would be fair to say that your career growth is heavily influenced by your ability to get stuff done. Although it's important to work harder, it is extremely essential to regularly update yourself so that you can work better. Whatever we listen, read, or understand builds our own mental frameworks. If you have empowering information and updated skill sets, you will know how to get more things done in a faster way. If you do not have the updated information, you can end up spending a large chunk of your time into tasks that can be optimized. This is why people who succeed or learn relatively faster constantly update the information that is stored in their heads. In this episode, I will be sharing five extremely powerful mental frameworks that will help you cut out unnecessary distractions and invest time into things that help you create better results. If you consistently create better results, you will grow faster than everyone else who's working with outdated mental models. So without wasting any further time, let's get right into it. This is Ansh Mehra, and you are listening to episode 20, season 2 of Take It Easy. Framework number one, looking beyond the generic labor. It's very easy to get stuck into what your core job is. It's alright to be focused on the details and slowly calibrate the finer details, but you have to remind yourself to look up from time to time to see the bigger picture. There are some ingredients that go beyond the generic labor you put into your work. And these ingredients help you amplify the effect your work has in your organization or in whichever way you contribute. Let's just take my example. I am a UX designer. At the outset, from a first impression, if I tell someone that I am a UX designer and I design apps, they would imagine me working on Figma, or some would imagine me doing some research or making some design systems. But these are the things that are visible to you. This is what a person can imagine. There are a lot of subtle, unsaid, unlisted, and invisible things that I do from time to time. This includes articulation of my thoughts, time management, upskilling, communicating across various stakeholders. There's so much more happening. If I only stick to what my role literally asks, half of my designs would never ever reach the audiences, because you really need to understand subjects that go beyond your day-to-day job and not just see your output from a limited perspective. I have always tried to look up and learn about the business side or the marketing side. I regularly practice self-awareness, and I really spend a lot of time observing interviews, not just designer interviews, but maybe film star interviews, producer interviews, any kind of interview that I see online. I regularly watch design feedback videos, and they have helped me just as much as my core UX skills. In short, try to build skills that go beyond your basic job and incorporate the insights you get from these topics. Here are some suggestions to begin with. Like, these three topics can be the starting point for your exploration. Topic number one, learn to give and receive feedback without taking it personally. I've specifically made an episode on this. It's episode 24 from season 1. Basically, there are two core realizations. One is that every person on the team is trying to make the product successful, no matter what you're doing, whether it's an app, whether it's a movie, it could be anything that you're working on. So the intention, when someone comes to you and points out something, the intention is always towards making the product successful. And it's never really intended towards a team member, but that is not what your primitive brain would tell you. Everyone is viewing stuff from their own perception, and you really have to understand that that criticism, that opinion is not against you. It is to make a product successful, and that is the collective goal. And rather than trying to prove what you want to say from your own mind, rather than proving that you are right, you guys have to explore what is the reality, right? Are you operating from biases, or are you operating from an accurate fact-based standpoint, which is super important. Skill number two, you have to show and tell. It's very easy to reject ideas or say that it wouldn't work because you can imagine it failing, but it's super important to at least make a crude prototype or a rough version of what others are suggesting. This way, instead of clashing opinions, you end up working hands-on, and that gives you clarity. Sometimes you realize that, wait, this might be a good idea, and sometimes the other person finally gets it why it wouldn't work. Second skill that I would recommend you guys is to learn how to speak with fluency and proper diction. You really need to build a vocabulary that allows you to express what you feel. People don't have a machine to go through your thoughts. They don't even have the time to understand the subtext. They will understand whatever you speak in that moment and not what you think. You can go to YouTube and find hundreds of videos on this, but this one skill will really, really help you put things forward in a way where people understand what you're saying, where people can understand your intention. And you have to do this on the spot. You can't really take some time off and say that, hey, can you give me 5 minutes? Let me come back and collect my thoughts. That is not how it would work when you work with, you know, mature stakeholders. Skill number three could be understanding psychology and common cognitive biases. Now, what is a cognitive bias? It sounds like a heavy term, but I would suggest you to go on Google and look this up. If you have time, please read Principles by Ray Dalio. And if you're a UX designer, please check out growth.design. These two things will really inspire you a lot. All right, getting out of this first framework, let's discuss the second framework. Being cautious of unverified advice. I've been noticing an interesting trend about people who introduce new fears to my mind, and we all meet these people, right? These are the kind of people who propagate fears through stories that are not actually real, but they are only heard from one person to another. They are propagated through verbal discussions. This happens on a micro level as well as on a macro level. Let's begin from the small stuff. Okay, very, very basic example. A few months ago, I suddenly decided to color my hair metallic blue. Everyone I spoke to told me not to color my hair because some said it damages the hair roots, you get hair fall, your hair becomes white, all kinds of random information. But here's the fun part. All of these warnings were coming from people who had never colored their hair. Then I spoke to a reliable person who did color her hair, and she said that there's pretty much no risk at all, as long as you get it done by someone smart and use the right products. Now here's the caveat: to get a smart person, to get the right products, you have to spend more money. But if you have resources, if you have access to the right person, you have no risk at all. And that is how it works in a lot of places. The same pattern is visible in many other spheres. People warn other people about everything that can go wrong. I'm not saying things cannot go wrong. Obviously they will go wrong, but only when you are not prepared. If you have access to the right people, the right approach, the right mindset, then the chances of failing reduce heavily. And this is something most people forget to realize. Now, this doesn't apply to everything. There's a lot of stuff you should not do. If people tell you to stay away from fire, then it's better not to waste time burning yourself to learn the lesson. But when you get advice, check the subjectivity of that advice. How subjective is that warning? Is that advice based on science or laws or statistics? Or is it based on subjective emotions, you know, preconceived notions or mere perceptions? Framework number three, redefining how we perceive first impressions. First impressions are really important, especially in professional settings. They decide how people would perceive you. If they perceive you as an important person, then moving forward, they will take your opinion seriously. If you ruin your first impression, it'll take some extra time to tell them how good you are. And I hear a lot of advice on as to how we used to, how you can improve your first impression, and you should wear a certain kind of wardrobe, you should speak in a certain way. But here is the caveat. First impressions are really tricky. First impressions actually don't depend on the person using them, but the person who perceives them. This is a second layer of first impressions that I'm going to be discussing right now. The perceiver translates first impressions depending on his or her own personal level of wisdom and experience. A rookie would perceive a person with, say, big muscles and a fancy car as strong and successful because the rookie is naive enough to fall for it. This is where first impressions fail. The muscles can be a result of supplements and not strength. And the car would be a result of purchasing liabilities by selling one of their assets. But there's a huge percentage of people who are still fooled by first impressions. But I try to disable my subconscious judgments when I am experiencing the world or meeting new people. And this has helped me make better decisions. When someone comes up to me with a new idea, with a new concept, or with their job profile, or anything as a matter of fact, I don't judge them on the basis of their outer appearance, no matter what my subconscious programming tells me to do. I give them time. I give them this headspace, this area to elaborate and show me what they are made of. And a lot of people don't do this because there have been this huge, huge market of spreading, you know, tips and tricks as to how you can set a good first impression. But the reality is that things are stable in the longer run. You might have an amazing first impression, but if things are not stable, if things are not scalable, stuff would eventually fall down. So even though people really know how to set the first impression well, I would like you guys to explore how to perceive first impressions as well. Framework number 4. Redefining rejection, criticism, and failure. It's really important to redefine the meaning we give to rejection or failure or any kind of setback, because how you mean something, how you define something affects your experiences. So if you have defined the word failure as something which is negative, you will always feel bad when you face it. Do you give ratings to services like for cabs and food deliveries? What do you think happens when you're angry and you give someone a 1-star rating instead of 5? The stars usually go to the office headquarters for review, but the person who gets the 1-star is usually annoyed. He's so annoyed that he wouldn't care why he got the 1-star in the first place. The maximum it can do is hurt that person, but it wouldn't verbally explain its existence, right? Because that is the person's responsibility. If I am working in a company and a customer comes and gives me 1 out of 5 stars, the only thing that I have to do now is to understand why I got it. And this involves a lot of work. Like, this sounds super simple, but it really involves you to be extremely self-aware, take a pause and ask yourself that, dude, I get it. I really got 1 out of 5 stars. What do I do now? What is this 1-star telling me? Because that 1-star is not going to pop out from the screen and tell you that, hey, Ansh, this is the reason why I'm here. That is my responsibility. A lot of people are annoyed or offended by bad ratings, but in reality, it's feedback. It's data for optimization. The world around us also gives us feedback, but not in terms of stars. There are other metrics it follows. Let's just say, if you're not earning enough, you know, you're not able to handle people, if you're not able to manage your team, don't complain or cry about it because it won't really help you make things better. Don't think it's unfair or the world is cheap or the world is very rude. Instead, redefine this as feedback from the marketplace. You're getting feedback from the universe. And you would start soon to recognize why this is happening. It's just a shift in the perspective. If your body is not looking the way you want it to look, don't lose your confidence or mock people who are better looking. Instead, see this as a feedback given from your body to you. If you don't change the way you operate, the feedback will definitely stay the same. This one single shift has really helped me from seeing everything as a cause of, my own actions. I'm not saying that things don't stress me out, or I'm not saying that I don't feel bad about stuff. You know, they really push my buttons at times, but the frequency has drastically reduced. You know, this one single shift of seeing everything as optimization data really reduces the time of feeling bad. I obviously feel bad because that is a very natural response, but I jump back very quickly. And now I see everything as a cause of something that I have done. I've taken absolute responsibility for whatever that happens to me. I don't get mad at stuff because I avoid taking things personally. I take rejections and failures as this data set point. And I would recommend you guys to do the same. It takes time. It takes around 4 to 5 months to completely inculcate this habit. But once you do it, it's almost like a superpower, because this is what life is about, guys. I mean, it's learning and optimizing and feeling good about it. See, the game is never over. It keeps going on and on. And even when you fail, you haven't really failed. It's the game giving you feedback for the next attempt. The only challenge here is to recognize what's the feedback. Because this is not an app. The world we live in won't explicitly teach you what the feedback is and how to improve it. This is where it gets interesting, because now you can go really deep and find many different ways to improve even the tiniest of things and improve your overall score. And now we come to the last framework, being real with yourself. If you ever go to the gym, you'd always find someone with really big muscles do biceps with, I don't know, like 20 kgs or something. That doesn't mean that you can go and do the same. You haven't developed the proper muscle to lift that kind of weight yet. Yet is the key word. It is not intelligent to play with weights that are not compatible with your muscles. And I'm not just talking about gym, I'm talking about everything. When you try to imitate someone, when you try to spend money like someone else, or buy a car like someone else, or read 20 books like someone else, you're basically trying to force weight that is not compatible with your muscle. Everyone is on their own individual level. Everyone is running their own race. And that is why imitation in any field, whether it's personal life, career, or financial advice, is not the best way to move forward. You can ask a specific person that, hey, can you tell me how you reached here? Can you tell me how you're able to afford a fancy car? Or how you're able to manage your time and attend so many parties and still do well at work? And then see the path that person is taking. And then ask yourself, what muscles do I need to build to carry that weight? If you directly jump to live your life in a way that others do, you'll definitely tear a tissue. So yes, these five mental frameworks have been really helpful to me in my own personal career and life. I came across these things in the last 1 year and I never really found them in books or videos. So hope this helps you out. I'll be back with another episode super soon. This was Ansh Mehra and you were listening to episode 20, season 2 of Take It Easy.